Well, hey, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Racing Hotspot. It is Tuesday, March 26th, and we are coming off fresh off the weekend for NASCAR in Austin, Texas. That's the Circuit of the Americas. Formula One in Australia and IndyCar running in the Thermal Motorsports Club or Thermal Club out in California. My name is Devin Poslesny, and I'm with Mr. Jordan Jenkins. First of all, Jordan, how are you, and how's things going?
Well, I'm good. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good.
Back in person for two episodes in a row.
Yeah, he's here again. He's here again. Unfortunately, you're back on campus for spring break. Had to come home for an untimely event tomorrow, but happy to have you here. And next week, we'll be doing it over the phone again. But with our new technology here, hopefully the FaceTime will be a little bit easier, and we won't have to use that whole Zoom 40-minute timer thing. So we'll have to see how it goes. But the big topic we're going to talk about this weekend, obviously, we're a more so NASCAR podcast talking about. We're going to talk about track limits as well as, what else did you say? Oh, no stage breaks.
No stage breaks.
In road course racing. But let's real quick recap the other two races that happened this weekend, IndyCar and Formula One. I'll start with Formula One because technically they were first at 12 a.m. on Saturday night or Sunday morning. To be honest, it was a typical Formula One race. You know, you didn't have no red flags, a couple virtual yellows, if not just one at the end with George Russell. But the big talking point was, five laps into the race, Max Verstappen has a mechanical failure, and he's out. Mm-hmm. Now, a lap prior to that, Carlos Sainz got by him, which was a huge thing because they were like, oh my goodness, we got a battle for the lead. Somebody's passing him. Like, because as you know, and most people out there know, it's been almost 2 years and 40-something races where it's just been the Max Verstappen show. So it's like, when you have somebody pass Verstappen, it's like, whoa.
Whoa, my.
But then, of course, then he has what I think they determined was a rear brake issue that caused him to have to retire the car. And now people are going, well, was Sainz really faster? Or was Verstappen just getting pulled backwards?
Sainz was getting pulled backwards.
Verstappen was getting pulled backwards because of the rear brake issue. So who knows? But what we know is that that happened.
One thing I saw on Twitter was someone say, if you Formula One fans are rooting for this Max Verstappen retirement from this race, you're just sick. And it shows like the timings of Verstappen going like this, slowly but surely.
Just going down.
And then I look at the comments and all the gifts are someone laying in like a hospital bed. And
oh, jeez.
Like, and some people saying, I guess I'm sick.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's motorsports. Mechanical failures happen. Like, there's nothing, you can't sit there and say, oh, well, maybe somebody manipulated. No, it's not like a manipulation thing. It's not anything other than that. He started on the pole or row one. I can't remember if he was first or second. But either way, he was up front. He had speed. It's just one of those racing deals, you know, and it just happens. But funny, or not funny, haha, but more funny, like, really, a couple laps later, Hamilton retires his car for not a similar accident, but it was an engine issue or power unit issue. Pulls off to the side of the racetrack. That was one of the first virtual cautions of the day. And there you go. It's kind of funny because it's like Verstappen went out and then Hamilton went out. And it's like, wait, 2 years ago, like when they were neck and neck for the championship battle, all the mainstream media would be blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
But because now, you know, Verstappen's kind of taken a dominant role in the series and Hamilton kind of faded back with the redesign of the Mercedes, it's just kind of like, wow, Hamilton's out. All right.
Anyways,
back to green flag racing. But no, I mean, it was overall an exciting race. Had some good back and forth action, pitch strategies, things like that. But like I said, it was the typical, I don't want to say stereotypical Formula One race, but they all settled in and they ran their own races. Alonso and Russell were battling it out there towards the end. And that's when George Russell didn't even hit Alonso. No contact. He just lost the car, slides through the gravel pit, hit the tire barrier, comes back onto the racetrack, not in a aggressive or a fast dangerous type of way, but he just kind of slid onto the racetrack. And when he did, the tires, which were still tethered to the car as designed, got underneath the car and it propped him up on the side. And George Russell is a pretty calm guy from what I've seen. But if you listen to his in-car audio, he's on his side. The bottom of the car is facing oncoming traffic. And he's like, red, 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 red. Like, you could hear, I don't want to say the fear, but the urgency in his voice of like, I don't know who's coming. He was literally right in the middle of the racetrack. So thankfully, race officials saw it. They immediately threw out a virtual yellow. The race ended under caution, technically. But overall, like I said, it was a typical Formula One race. Lando Norris was up front. He was battling. Like, it was Ferrari versus McLaren, which was awesome to see these newer teams fighting up front, you know, other than the Mercedes and the Red Bull, or just the Red Bull, you know.
I was going to say, it's probably just Red Bull.
Well, I mean, it was a couple of years ago, Mercedes versus Red Bull, but now it was just kind of sort of, here's Mercedes.
The only thing that can stop Verstappen from winning races is his car.
Isn't it? No, I mean, and I think Ferrari's starting to catch up, though. From what I've seen this year, now granted, this is the first race I actually saw because I saw it live, I should say. I've watched the other ones back on DVR, but
just yes, stayed up for it?
This one, yeah. Well, this one, it was funny. This one fell into my lap. What am I going to watch? Oh, right, Formula One. Like, it was like, oh, right, that's on. But I wound up watching it, and it was, like I said, it was a good race. But from what I've seen, Ferrari kind of catching up to Red Bull. And I think, I don't know if it's too early to say maybe Ferrari wins the world championship, but like, if they don't, they're going to be a close second. Like, they're making progress, and it's good progress for them, and maybe not so much for Red Bull, but I think it's in the right direction for them. So we'll have to see how it goes. So yeah, that was Formula One. IndyCar ran what I'm going to call an all-star race.
Yeah, it pretty much works like it.
Yeah, it was an exhibition race. That's what they were calling it. They weren't calling it an all-star race. They were calling it the Indy Million? IndyCar Million?
Indy Million Dollar Challenge, something like that.
Yeah, out at the Thermal Club race course, which, as Lee Diffy was describing throughout the entire broadcast, the way to relate this to people going, what is that? You have your private golf clubs, right? That like golf, golf course resorts, you know, where it's members only, no public, you know, you know, it's private, it's well kept, like it's exclusive. Mm-hmm. That's what this is. It's a racetrack in California that is meant for, you know, you and me with a lot of money to go out there, and we have our McLaren parked in the garage. We have a house to go, like, go enjoy for a weekend. And you know what? I'm going to take the McLaren out for a quick spin, pull out onto pit road, and go for a lap.
Right.
Like, it's meant like that. It's like a private golf course, private country club. That's what I was trying to get at, country club, for motorsports. Which, funny enough, we kind of have something like that up here in New Hampshire, up in, it's just beyond, Moultonboro Academy. What's the name of it? It's Club Motorsports, but I can't think of where it's called, where it is. And it's just, it's a private race course. It doesn't have housing. It doesn't have anything like that, but people bring their own cars up. Jordan's looking it up, so hang on. Bring their own cars up, whether it's on trailers or they drive it, and then they go run on the course.
Tamsworth, New Hampshire.
Tamsworth, yes. It's a beautiful race course. Up in Tamworth.
Is it bad I never knew this existed until you said something?
A little bit. But it's okay. It's okay. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, it's a private race course. Same thing with out in Thermal. You know, it's not something you're going to see like NASCAR or IndyCar. I mean, maybe IndyCar, but like, you're not going to see, it's not like New Hampshire Motor Speedway. You know what I mean? Like, New Hampshire Motor Speedway has everything built up, as you just saw in those photos. Club Motorsports is, you know, has all the safety guardrails.
Surrounded by trees.
Has everything. But it's not built up like a road course, like with grandstands and camping. Maybe one day. Who knows? I don't know. But it's a beautiful facility. Same deal, though, out in California with Thermal. It was, you know, your viewers or your live audience were standing on the balconies of their houses. You know, like you had a paddock area that had fans who paid top dollar to be there. But it was just overall, I think it was a great race course. It had everything. It had hairpins, it had sweeping corners, it had long straightaways. It was really neat. But the format of IndyCar there was, you're right. It was the Thermal Club. He just Googled it. The Thermal Club is what it was called. But the format of it was they had two, I want to say, I don't know how long they were, but basically they were open practice / test sessions where some teams used it to just go out and test stuff for the road courses and, things like that. Other teams used it as an opportunity to practice for the race. But then what they did is they had qualifying to set their field for their heat races. And then their heat races were two 10-lap heat races or 20 minutes, one or the other, whichever one came first, 20 minutes plus a lap. Top six from those heats went on to the finals. So it was a 12-car field. It was two 10-lap segments with a 10-minute halftime. And it was, they had one set of tires. So that was kind of sort of the talk was strategy. Do you go out and run hard for 10 laps and then possibly have your tires fade in the second 10? Or do you lay back and then possibly come through? Colton Herta chose that second one. And he was like way back. I want to say like plus 10 seconds off the lead coming to the halftime break. But then when the green flag flew again after the halftime break, he came through the field like a hot knife through butter. Like, he came up forward. But the driver who won, I'm blanking his name right now.
Alex Palou.
Thank you. I was going to say AP. I knew that. Alex Palou dominated the race. He did a great job of just getting out in front and taking off. He was in his own zip code, really. The course is almost 3 miles, so there wasn't anything like he was going to possibly lap somebody, but it was still, he was out front, and he was gone.
Like a William Byron.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Well, but the only difference is from the IndyCar race to the Cup race was that there wasn't a Christopher Bell tracking him down.
That is like, true.
Like, he was out there, and that was it. Like, he was gone. See you later, bye. I'll catch you on the flip side type deal. But yeah, no, I mean, I honestly think overall it was, I mean, Jordan said he didn't see the highlights. He didn't catch the race. And I said, really, he didn't miss much other than the strategy of it. And that's not a knock at the race, but like, it wasn't like a Talladega wreck fest, you know, like it wasn't like,
or Phoenix a couple weeks ago. In
well, exactly. Like, but it wasn't like Bristol where it was like, oh my gosh, you need to watch the highlights. Like, Or like a Daytona where it's like, did you see that wreck? Like, no, I didn't. Oh, look, this was like, there was that one accident in Heat 1. And it was just somebody got out of line or had a bad hit out of line. And then turn one is a hairpin. So as soon as he was in the infield, he was coming back across traffic and he took out two or three cars. It was the IndyCar driver who came from Formula 1. Who is in the accident at Bahrain? Who is in the fiery accident? Oh my goodness. I am. Grosjean. Roman
Grosjean.
Yes. I knew I said his last name wrong. But yes, that guy, Roman. I was like, I can picture him. But it was unfortunately Roman got hit by Scott Dixon, came across the racetrack, collected another driver. He was fired up, though, and Dixon, after the heat race, was just like, yeah, that was kind of a unfortunate situation, and he definitely was, Dixon accepted that it was him. Like, it wasn't like he was like, I don't know what happened. Like, he was like, that's on me. Sorry about that. So, anyways, IndyCar was great. Like I said, good weekend. They race at Long Beach in a couple weeks.
April 21st. So they have like a whole month.
Oh my goodness, you're right. Yeah. Sorry, I'm already in April. My mind's
I am too.
Yeah, my mind's already like, it's April. No, it's not. So they have a month. But yeah, they got their next race in Southern California. Formula One, by the way, I forgot to mention, they are racing the Japanese Grand Prix on Sunday the 7th. So that's 2 weeks.
I wonder where that is.
Yeah. It's the Suzuka circuit. So anyway, Sunday, April 7th, 1 a.m. Eastern for Formula 1.
1 a.m. Eastern?
1 a.m.
Oh, you got another hour to wait for that one.
I'm going to miss it.
But IndyCar is in doing the Acura Grand Prix of Long Beach, like you said, April 21st. That's at 3 p.m., so a little later start what we're used to seeing with IndyCar.
Well, but they're on the West Coast, so for them it's noonish.
I mean Eastern time.
No, I know, but I'm saying for them it's around noon, which they would run around noon here on the East Coast. But because we're 3 hours ahead or behind, or yeah, ahead, then we get the 3 o'clock slot. But anyways.
But we're just a few short weeks away from, well, I say a few short weeks, but in reality, we're one.
We're two races away.
Including the Grand Prix of Long Beach, we are three IndyCar races away from the Indy 500.
Woo!
So I say few short weeks, it's really May 26th, but yeah, in reality, for IndyCar, it's you got one, this one, then you got two more, and then it's the Indy 500, but it's really, months away.
Well, I mean, the month of May is a month away, and it's crazy to think that we're already, 3 months into 2024. But, yeah, so that's kind of the quick recap for the open wheel stuff. Sports cars didn't run this weekend, and yeah. NASCAR had all three series at the Circuit of the Americas, Trucks, Xfinity, and Cup. Overall, three good races, to be honest. They were pretty well run. Officiating was pretty, consistent. There was a couple times where it was like, wait, why did they call that and not this? But that's to be expected when you have the human factor in the race control. But I think overall the race was great. Races were great. Truck race was exciting. Xfinity race, they're all kind of mixing together right now. I'm trying to think of what the standout moments were during those races.
Well, I think the truck one was Marco Andretti losing his whole his whole rear axle in his truck.
Yes. I was just gonna say, I'm like, there was something that happened during that race.
Using the definition of driving the wheels off of it to full extent.
Yes. I was gonna say, like, there was something that happened during that race that I wanted to talk about, and that was it. And by the way, NASCAR took, I believe, the truck and the rear axle
to the R&D
back
center.
To R&D to say what happened, because although it's not, he was at a port of the racetrack that it was a slow point of the racetrack.
And there was no one around him.
It wasn't going to be too detrimental to anything. It's still something that if that happens at a Talladega,
exactly.
Like, that's not good. So, other thoughts on the truck race?
Connor Zilich. The 17-year-old,
yeah,
who was a track house development driver in their program.
He was a talking point all day.
He got the pole in his first ever Truck Series start. Obviously, then he kind of overshot turn one in the very first lap. So I don't think he ever led a lap. But I mean,
he was on the comeback all day, though.
Yeah, he came back all day. It was really the Connor Zilich show. I mean, he fell down to like 20th, I think, off. After overshooting turn one there, and then all of a sudden, here he is in the top five again, and then I think he got a couple penalties, and he's like, oh, he has to go back into the back. I'm like, oh, here's Connor Zilich again.
Yeah.
Overall finishing fourth, so just 17. He's not even old enough to run the super speedways, or even, he's probably still in high school.
Yeah.
Maybe, but 17 years old, and first truck series starting, you finish fourth on a... Overall, a tough road course, not too bad, and getting the pole for it. So.
Yeah, and a learning curve or a learning experience for him as well, because of overshoot turn one. Okay, put your head down, work your way back up, and then have another issue, like just the back and forth.
I don't know if you had a chance to see the Twitter interaction that Jesse Love and Connor Zilich had.
I did not, no.
I forget who started it, but someone was like, hey, Jesse Love, can you give... What advice can you give to each other, like for both of them? And Jesse Love goes, how to make turns on the road courses. For Jesse Love said that to Connor Zillich. So Connor Zillich responded with, how do you save fuel mileage on super speedways? Because obviously Jesse Love ran out of gas the last super speedway we were on and ultimately lost the race. But obviously good fun between both of them because obviously they're Jesse Love's 20, Zillich is 17. So they're pretty close together.
Yeah, they're young. They're on the same wavelength as far as like generational and all that. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think overall the truck race was solid. I think that, you know, it was a good race overall. And given the fact it was
Brett Griffin, obviously, the Door Bumper Clear host.
Yeah.
That said, it was asked Door Bumper Clear because I believe Jesse Love and Connor Zillich are both on the show today.
I haven't gotten a chance to listen to it yet.
And I found that out from Action Detrimental that I watched on the way here. And the Jesse Love executive said, what brake marker should I use in the turn one at COTA? Which Connor Zillich then responded with, what's the best way to save fuel on super speedways? And then Jesse Love responded with this picture that I'm showing Devin of Zillich in the 28 and Jesse Love right behind him.
On Watkins Glen.
At Watkins Glen. And Jesse Love is pushing Zillich.
I mean, I think that's fantastic for the sport, you know, having those Twitter or X interactions, because not only are we as fans watching going, ha, this is awesome.
Bubba Wallace and Ryan Blaney had one a few weeks ago, but obviously we know their friendship they've been really close, so they had one similar or something like that.
Exactly.
I think that's why what makes NASCAR such a great sport is obviously that, but I mean, you don't get interactions like that in any other sport.
Not public ones, at least.
Yeah, not public
ones. You know, you might have one in the clubhouse after a baseball game, but not everybody's in the clubhouse or seeing it.
But Corey Heim obviously won the truck race, and I mean, 3 wins last year, that was his first one of the year, and it was a pretty dominating fashion.
Yeah.
And as Denny Hamlin said today on his podcast, it kind of shows the skill level Corey Heim has. He can win on any track. He can win super speedways, ovals, mile and a half, and road courses. So like that, first one of the year is a road course.
Yeah.
And probably the toughest one they have on the schedule, with being 3.4 miles long.
Well, yeah, but also it just being, I think the great thing about Circuit of America is because, I mean, your other mile and a half are only a mile or so shorter than it. Watkins Glen's 2.5. Sonoma's about 2.5, maybe 2. The Roval's about a mile and a half, or no, 2 miles or so. But I think what makes Circuit of America is so much more difficult than every other road course we race on is the fact that, first of all, it was designed for Formula One, so it's meant for your technical, you know, you have your fast portions, you have your DRS zones, but you also have your lefts and your rights and your technical, you know, you're not the only time you're resting during that on that course is that back straightaway, which even then you're thinking about your next corner.
Mm-hmm.
And the front straightaway, but even then you're thinking about the next corner.
And Denny Hamlin on the podcast today said, how does Formula One run there with how low they are to the ground and all the bumps that COTA has? It's like, how do they even do that without destroying their cars?
Yeah, I mean, well, let me ask Denny Hamlin this. What bumps are you referring to? The curbs that you're supposed to be on the other side of or or on the actual racing line?
The racing line.
Because unlike Formula One, NASCAR's track limits are to some
extent not there.
Yeah, like they're there in the S's.
But that's it.
Whereas Formula One, it's, see that curb? You need to be on that side of it. Mm-hmm. You go over it, I mean, 2 wheels over it, whatever, but
going back to Corey Heim, I mean, he's finished second at Daytona after starting 26th, started 19th at Atlanta, finished third, started 25th at Las Vegas, finished third, Bristol started 15th, finished sixth, and then started second at COTA and finished first. So top 10s every single week for him, and that's given him the points lead. Certainly, Carr, obviously, it's still early, but he is now the points leader. Mm-hmm. And the truck's taken over Tyler Akram, who dropped to third.
It's not bad at all. It's not a bad situation at all for Corey. I think that he's definitely going to be somebody we're talking about you know, deep into the season, if not a championship four contender. So definitely good stuff coming from him. We're going to talk more about track limits in a minute. I know I kind of hinted at it, but we have the Xfinity race to talk about.
Yep.
So any other thoughts on the truck race?
No, that's it.
For the Xfinity race, more or less the same. I mean, they ran their race. They did what, excuse me, I don't want to say what they were expected to do, but they, you know, they went out and ran their, I'm trying to remember, hold on. I'm going on the YouTube channel, look at the highlights. Because again, there was something that happened in that race.
SVG cutting the course?
That's what it, well, okay, there's that. But it was the end of it. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, again, there's something big that happened during that race. And it was the
Austin
fact
Hill
that,
and SVG battle?
Yeah, Austin Hill versus SVG and Kyle Larson sitting right there going, thank you. I mean, that was a fantastic battle to the end. Now, Jordan, you mentioned the SVG cutting the course penalty, which unfortunately moved him from second to 27th, I believe. Or 28th.
Yes, 27th.
Did we ever figure out what corner he cut?
No.
Okay.
They never told us. They just said he cut the course in the S's, which obviously makes sense because that was the only time, only place NASCAR was penalizing him for doing it.
Okay.
But it kind of went on a long topic.
We never saw
where he did it.
Yeah.
But
that's what it was.
It kind of went on the discussion before even the cup race happened because there's a lot of Xfinity penalties. I don't think there was as much in the cup, but Xfinity did it was a lot.
Mm.
And they penalized him on the pass-through right away. Obviously, in SVG's case, since it was the final lap he did it on, they penalized him 30 seconds. Probably is 30 seconds.
Whatever the equivalent of a pass-through would be.
Yeah, and so they penalized him 30 seconds and dropped him 27th.
Mm.
So it's like a lot of people don't like how they necessarily were like, oh, how are you penalizing on a pass-through after, like, one go? Because what Action Detrimental said today is they said you can't see when you're in the S's. Like, you can't see where the curbs are. But Hamlin said you know when you go over when you don't hear the rumble strips on your car. Like, you that are on the highway. Like, you know when your tires are hitting it because your car vibrates. So when Denny Hamlin said, you'll know when you go over it,
yeah.
So you hope you hear the rumble strips, but overall, he's like, you can't really see where you are on the track in the S's.
I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where they had the turtles in there a couple years ago, and people didn't like them because when that happened, when they hit the turtles, it would destroy the car, right? But at the same time, they then now are sitting here saying, well, we don't know where the track limits are because some drivers feel like others exploited it and got away with it, and some of them feel like they got targeted. Now, granted, NASCAR was using the same type of technology they use for Formula One with the track limits, so it's legit equipment. It wasn't like just some guy sitting outside on the scaffold.
Oh, he went over the ball. He went over the curb.
I think he went over. Like, they weren't doing that, but it definitely was one of those things where it was just like, when you got called out on it, you almost wanted to say, really?
Yeah.
Like, almost like a basketball game. Really, ref?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
But
I got called for fouled that guy, but what did he do? Yeah. He fouled me back. Why
a lot of people,
you know?
But a lot of people talked about on Twitter and Instagram and all that is, does NASCAR really have to do a pass-through penalty the first time they do it? Because SVG was really good on that, obviously, because we know what he has done in supercars. That's those. He didn't never race at Coda, but those are the type of tracks he did all the time: road courses, street courses. And the one time he does it, it's on the final lap,
and
he loses. He goes from second to 27th.
Give him a warning.
Yeah, and because obviously it kind of based on what a lot of people said, it ruined the entertainment of the Xfinity race when it's like, oh, he went over. Oh, you got to do the pass-through. And it's like, oh, he did it again. Oh, he has to do it again.
I get that.
But something that I thought was interesting was Denny Hamlin talked to Shane Van Gisbergen before the cup race, before the driver in shows.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, what does supercars do in this situation? And he goes, well, one, they would have penalized the 21 for bumping me out of turn one at the, on the on that last restart when that battle started. And he go, but he goes, in terms of track limits, they give you a three-strike rule. They give you two warnings, and then the third time is the penalty.
Interesting.
Obviously, I'm not saying they should do that, but I'm like, they should. I feel like they should at least warn the driver once instead of like, oh, they went over it, passed through automatically.
Right.
Especially where, like, you know, everyone's rooting for SVG. I was rooting for SVG during that finale, during those final laps, hoping he gets his first win. And then I found that he cuts the course after finishing second, and it's like, oh.
Right. Right.
No, all, I mean, all, so I felt like that battle was like all for nothing. It was like, oh, now he battled for ultimately nothing because he's not in the top three.
Right. But I mean, to the average fan, that was still a great battle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, now, just, and just, granted, they'll still look back at that in 5 years and say, watch this Xfinity battle.
Yeah. It just sucks that watching and then after the race where
it's taken
they
away.
Were like, oh, he got Adam Alexander. Got,
oh, by the way.
Oh, by the way. Count. Oh, by the way. Yeah, after they interview him, too, and he's all happy, even though he probably could be a little irritated. He's smiling ear to ear, and he's like, oh, that was fun.
I mean, also, let me ask.
He goes, that was fun, and then Adam Alexander goes, oh, he got a penalty, so he's not going to, he's about to find out he's not for the second.
Let me ask you this. Like, okay, so Fox or Mike Joy explained it. You have the automated system that flags it. Mm-hmm. Then you have somebody review it. Mm-hmm. And then it goes up the chain. It goes up like two or three links of the chain until officially the penalty is handed out. Were the links in the chain it had to go up, were they just watching the end of the race? Is that why it took so long?
That's what I feel. Because they didn't announce it until like 5 minutes after.
Yeah, because usually
they did like four interviews before they actually said, oh, SVG has this.
Right.
Or like usually even before they cross the finish line, they're in the race. They're like, oh. Like, I think John Hunter Nemechek got one. They were on it before.
Right, like Denny Hamlin goes across track limits in the S's. By the time he gets to turn 12, he knows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, by, you know, maybe not that, but at least by the time he gets back to pit road, this way he can then serve his penalty then.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. I mean, I get it. I guess with the action, you want to call a fair race. So maybe if somebody's going, hey, I got something, they're going, I can wait. But, like, I don't know. But either way, I think track limits in general, that's a talking point for this weekend. And, I mean, even at the end of the S's, that corner 8-9, how much dirt was on the actual racing line in turn 8? Because they were on the inside of the curb. They were running the paved runoff the Formula 1 uses. And they were kicking up dirt. And even after the, was it cup qualifying? Bob Pockris was asking drivers, and they were like, we need to do something about that. And NASCAR's not going to necessarily make a drastic change overnight. They're not just going to put turtles out there and say, you know how you practiced and ran this corner?
I think they packed it with sand in that area that they were complaining about, which is, I think, why there's so much sand, because obviously they're like, they're going to keep running that line. It's like, oh, sand, and obviously that's going to just kick up everywhere.
Right. I don't know. It's something that I think NASCAR needs to explore. I mean, Coda is the only course right now that really has this issue, because everything, like Circuit of the Americas, is designed to have extra runoff for the Formula One cars, right? You miss a corner, you go wide, you at least have another lane of pavement before the grass or gravel pit, if not more. You go to Watkins Glen, there are some places where it's just pavement grass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no wiggle room, which is what Formula One tracks used to be like.
Right.
So they at tracks like that, it's self-policing as far as track limits. Whereas at a place like Circuit of the Americas, it's designed to have all this runoff room, again, for Formula One, the purpose of the course. There's nothing wrong with it. But I think you need to have either more course limits or just have it so that your white lines are your limits. And if you, like, do what Formula One does. You're allowed to drop two tires over the white line without anybody saying anything. But as soon as you put all four across that white line, that's an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Formula One even does it with the warnings. Hey, we got a warning. Mm-hmm. Hey, we got a warning. I don't know how many warnings they give before a 10-second penalty is given.
Three.
For Formula
Three
One?
Three warnings and then
for,
a penalty.
For F1? Mm-hmm. Okay. So.
That perks of watching the that I found that out during Action. I would not know that unless I watched Action Detriment okay. today. Because like, Danny's co-host actually said that's what Formula One does. It's three strikes and three warnings, and then you get the penalty.
Right. So, okay. So, do what Formula One does. Have your two-tire rule so that a driver can still use the runoff, like the curbing, to go wide on a corner. But don't – I mean, look at turn 19. Formula One runs tight along 19 to 20. NASCAR's literally going beyond the scoreboard – or not scoreboard, the walls and coming back on because that's how far the runoff they're using.
Just like turn one under the track and
right.
almost in the grass when they take the turn.
Right. Like, and I mean, I get it. Hard racing's hard racing, and if nobody's going to call it, then you use every inch that you're given. But, like, I don't know. I feel like that's something they need to address. And who knows? Who knows what NASCAR is going to do? And I mean, and that's an example of how NASCAR needs to talk to SMI, who rents the track, who needs to talk to the Circuit of the Americas to then make necessary adjustments. Like some of the drivers that Bob Pockrass was interviewing were saying, well, they should pave it tonight. They should put in a patch tonight. They should do this tonight. They should do that tonight. And in my head, I'm going, you know, if this was Daytona or if this was a NASCAR-owned track or even an SMI-owned track, yeah. Like, if NASCAR owns the track, they just need to look at themselves in the mirror and say, we're going to go pave this. Mm-hmm. If it's SMI, they just got to talk to Marcus Smith and they do it. This, for COTA, it's NASCAR to SMI to the owners of Circuit of the Americas.
Like, well, the owners of Circuit of the Americas is SMI. Pretty sure.
I don't believe you're right on that stat.
I'm probably not.
SMI rents it, I think. Who? Hang on. Who owns it? Circuit of the Americas LLC owns Circuit of the Americas.
Oh.
That's what I was like, hold on a minute here.
I was close.
So, because like I said, SMI rents out the facility to use for NASCAR, which I think was a brilliant move by them, but that's beside the point, by SMI. But, like, it just, there's a chain of command there. You know, NASCAR needs to go to SMI, who needs to then go to the Circuit of the Americas, or maybe not even. SMI just might point and say, go talk to this guy. And is that guy there?
Who knows?
You know, can you make an overnight decision that quick? I mean, I would assume the owners of SMI or the owners of Circuit of the Americas are around during an event weekend, but who knows? You're right. So I think before next year, you're going to see
yeah.
think changes made to turn eight. We'll talk more about track limits. I know we've just been kind of sprinkling it in here, but go ahead.
Going back to the Xfinity Series ending with obviously Kyle Larson ended up getting the win. Do you think if you're Austin Hill, you have the right to be mad at SVG no. for bumping you? I don't think so either.
No, you punted him into turn one, whether you meant to do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
You got into his back bumper and pushed him up out of the racing groove to allow you to pass him. Then SVG returned the favor, maybe a little bit more aggressively.
Because SVG came back with a beaten up race car. Yeah, it's like, what'd you do?
Exactly. Like, don't get me wrong. If I'm RCR, I'm looking at this going, that wasn't eye for an eye. That was, I'm going to knock you out.
Yeah.
But in SVG's defense, the Xfinity, even the cup cars, are built a little differently than supercars. Mm-hmm. So he in a supercar, he might have to hit that hard.
Whereas in Xfinity,
you hit. The whole nose crunches. Like, who knows if he knows is what I'm saying.
Well, at the same time, SVG told Denny before driver entrance during the Cups race that Austin Hill would have been penalized for bumping SVG in turn one.
Right.
So then, if this was supercars, obviously it's not. Austin Hill is not part of the equation anymore.
Right.
So obviously SVG, I mean, I don't want to say get used to because obviously he knows now that, oh, he just hit me. Oh, yeah, I can do it back.
Right.
And obviously, kind of, I don't want to call it an unwritten rule, but as a lot of drivers say, if I'm going to get hit, I'm coming back a lot harder.
Right.
So, and obviously SVG would just played along with that.
Right.
I mean, it was still a great battle. I mean, they didn't really lose track position. SVG still held on to two. Hill still held on to three, while ultimately now second.
Right. Well, but, I mean, and I think where you then get into the point where it becomes an issue is if Austin Hill comes off turn 20 and right rears him.
Yes.
You know, because now it's like, it's kind of like, you know, you hit me, I hit you, we're even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you then come and hit me again, it's like, okay, well, now we're not even.
And Kyle Larson at third is like the whole time was like, yeah, hit each other. Yeah. Yeah, do some but, more.
And it was funny because there were people out there on the Facebook groups who had a photo of them coming down the straightaway from a distance, and SVG is going towards the wall, and Austin Hill is following him to try and get a draft, and it looks like he's trying to right rear him. And people are like, Austin Hill's a dirty driver. And it's like, no, hold on. That's just perspective. He followed, he fell in behind him to try and get a draft back to the line. You know, like, there, whatever. Goes back to the saying that people on the internet are stupid. But, like,
unless you're in the race car yourself.
Right, exactly.
Well, actually, like, all, like, the time, that's not, all the time that's not the case. Sometimes it's obvious what they try to do.
Keyboard warriors, man. That's something. But anyways, I think that it's an eye for an eye situation. And like I said, whether or not Austin Hill meant to run into him in turn one or not, as soon as that happened, it's game on. You know, and I think SVG did a good job throughout the whole race of just, like, the whole lap, just kind of sort of laying back, waiting for his moment. But I will also say that I feel like in that last corner before that, like, stadium section around the pavilion there, he hit him once, and then he kept hitting him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and again, maybe that's how you have to do it. Maybe, actually, from what you're telling me with the rules, it doesn't sound like they do much bump and runs in supercars, but maybe in a supercar, that's how hard you have to hit. Like, but, like, with the Xfinity car, he hit him.
And it's like, oh,
and then he hit him again.
There goes the front end of his car.
Yeah, like, and then... And I think that you could tell that the inexperience for SVG there, because he then went wide with Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Larson would have bumped him and then turned left and ran away, whereas SVG bumped him and went with him.
Yeah.
So, and again, nothing against SVG, because this is only his, what, 10th race in a full body stock car?
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, he hasn't been running, he hasn't ran a lot of these yet. Now, if it's 2 years from now and he's still doing that, then somebody needs to step up and teach him how to hit and run. Like, we need to teach how to bump and run. But, like I said, I don't see anything wrong with it.
No, I don't see it either. I mean,
racing's racing.
Yeah, exactly. You exactly. Know?
Welcome to the show.
But the other thing now is, I guess, do we go to the cup race now?
Yeah. I mean, I think the Xfinity race was good. I think it was a good race. I think it was solid. I think the finish was great. Some people are saying that they should take the Xfinity race and move it to North Wilkesboro instead of Coda.
Dale Jr. started that movement.
Was it Dale Jr.?
Yeah, it was Dale Jr.
I don't know how I feel about that. We can talk more about that in a minute. But yeah, I mean, I think overall, good races so far in the weekend. Cup race.
I mean, I'm going to quote Denny here.
Okay.
Just because I just watched his podcast on the way here, so it's more fresh in my mind. It's what you can expect from a road course.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously road courses are probably not your most exciting races, obviously.
Road courses are your races throughout the season that are your controlled chaos races.
Yeah.
They are cars spinning out, NASCAR not calling a caution because it's a road course. You can get away with that. You have cars hitting each other. You have cars going off track. You have, like, it's probably the sloppiest race of the year on a road course, whether it be Watkins Glen, whether it be Coda, whether it be Roval, whether it be whatever track we go to. It's probably the sloppiest race you see.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also get away with it when it comes to road course racing, because road course racing isn't so much like aerodynamics like you'd see at Daytona or a mile and a half.
And I think a lot of what a lot of people hate, too, is obviously, and it's a big controversy. Well, I don't want to say a big controversy is the stage breaks between on road courses. Obviously, last year we didn't do it, and I kind of I liked it.
I did too.
But now, obviously, in this case, they brought him back for this year, and those were the only two cautions we had.
And I think
in that race, so it was more like, oh, caution. Oh, they come back. Oh, here they go. Oh.
And I think that's exactly why they brought him back.
And I think
we had a race last year on a road course,
Watkins Glen,
that went green.
Watkins Glen.
From green to finish.
And I think a lot of people didn't like is, a lot of people usually don't like your dominating victories. William Byron was dominated. Mm-hmm. But as Denny said, you're not going to get Atlanta every week. You're not going to get Daytona. And still right now, I think NASCAR's off to its best start ever in a season in a long time. Finishes-wise, lead change, overall race-wise, mm-hmm. excluding Phoenix. I'm not putting that in that category. And I'll say here the rest of the season, and excluding Phoenix, NASCAR's had a pretty amazing year so far. And, I mean, William Byron just dominated. And it kind of goes to show you how the road course has been changed, because obviously, Chase Elliott coming into the Cup Series was a known road course racer. Mm. AJ Allmendinger is obviously like that too, because he finished sixth and he's now part time again in the Cup. And then Xfinity looked like it was going to be the Allmendinger SVG show. But William Byron now, Christopher Bell, Ty Gibbs, Bowman. I mean, I guess Bowman's not really on the younger side, but he still is, but he's been there for a while. You have Chastain, but you have all these young guys that are now coming in being really good at road courses besides Chase Elliott now, who's ever since this Gen 7 car has not won on a road course. Mm. And Chase Elliott's also one of those drivers that have struggled mightily since the Gen 7 era. Obviously, yeah. Excluding really last year, he came back from injury, never was the same. But, I mean, 2022, he won one race.
Yeah.
But
viewership for this week, by the way, was up. Fox reported a 6% increase from 2023 with 3.31 million average viewers.
That's good.
That number keeps up, keeps NASCAR up by 11% over last year when you exclude the postponed Daytona 500.
I thought NASCAR was dead. That's what people on Twitter said. I thought NASCAR was dead.
The Xfinity race was up 10% from last year. Race had 891,000 viewers. And then, because we brought it up earlier, IndyCar and Peacock netted 816,000 viewers for the Thermal Challenge on Sunday.
And what did Formula One get?
I don't know. Let me see if I can find it.
But, I mean, obviously, yeah, I didn't think COTA was a bad race. I mean, obviously, definitely wasn't the most entertaining, but I don't really expect much out of road courses. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying, it's a road course race, it's going to stink. But overall, I mean, I don't come in expecting a lot out of road courses because, you know, just kind of give or take. I mean, obviously, Xfinity Series race finish was exciting. But, I mean, yeah, it's overall, it's, you can't really do much, you know?
Mm. Sorry, I'm trying to find the Formula One viewership. My apologies, folks. Right now, my my Twitter feed is kind of sort of full of the Baltimore bridge collapse. Accident from this morning, which, by the way, while we have, I'm saying that I want to give a quick shout out, or not shout out, a quick recognition to all the victims and people affected by that tragedy and accident this morning. So I don't have the information on Formula One viewership, but I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
So I was reading through some of the, like I said, when I was going through Twitter, I was seeing all of the Baltimore bridge accidents. I think that. Now I'm looking over your shoulder trying to see the viewership number.
I don't know how accurate this is, but it says 2024 Formula One Australian Grand Prix on 10. Networks 10 coverage of the form, which is the Australian channel, reached 3.2 million.
Wow.
But I don't know what the ESPN one was for here. But if even then, 3.2 million in Australia, obviously, yeah, you could add into that. Oh, yeah, it's in their home country, so they're probably going to tune in. But either way, that's really good.
That's good numbers.
Especially with, I don't really want to say it like this, but Formula One's ratings have kind of plummeted this year. As they, I don't think they have reached the race, but that's reached a million viewers yet, so.
Well, that's in the States, but yes, I know what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I'll have to see about that, and maybe we'll throw
and
it on
social media.
And while looking
at the ratings, I saw someone go, can we all agree that Formula One sabotages Max's car because her ratings are plummeting, so.
No, gosh. So, talking more about the cup race, back to the stage breaks. I personally understand why NASCAR puts the stage breaks in there for the exact reason that you said. We only had two cautions on Sunday, and they were the stage breaks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people out there who say we shouldn't have the stage breaks because we should have more organic racing and strategizing and everything, I agree with you. But then on the other side of that, I feel like the flip side of that coin is that NASCAR is going to be stricter with their cautions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to have a single car spin that comes back across the racetrack, and then NASCAR is going to throw a caution.
Right.
You know, whereas right now it's kind of like, whoop, can he get going? Yes, he can. Okay. And I think then you're going to alienate your road course fans who go, that's not how road course racing goes. The course is 3 miles long. You know, so we have a single car spin in turn 10. Well, guess what? There are 10 more turns before you even get back to the start finish line. You know, there's another 20 turns back to where I am. So I think that it's NASCAR's in a tough position. I think also when it comes to your TV partners, they've enjoyed having stage breaks because now they know that in 10 laps, we're going to have a commercial break.
Right.
You know, and as much as everybody out there says, oh, gosh, those commercial breaks. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, it's what pays the bills. I know you're looking at me, but as a business owner who pays bills using commercial breaks.
Yeah, but you don't do it where you miss.
I was gonna say
50% of the action.
I think that there's definitely other ways you can do it. But like,
especially on an oval, oh my God, every 10 laps. Oh, especially Bristol, oh my God.
Bristol's a unique case, though, because they're running 15-second lap times. They could take a 10 or a 15 second or a 30 second lap, a 30 second commercial and miss two laps.
And we've talked about it. Do more than 10 laps in that case. I mean, the code is different. It's 3.5, almost 3.5 miles long. It's like you go to a commercial, you can go a 2 minute commercial break, and it's like, oh, they're still on the same lap? Wow.
So, anyways. I guess my point is it's like a double-edged sword. You know, you want stage breaks with built-in cautions that bring restarts and crazy battles to turn one, or do you want clean green flag racing for 80 laps where the TV production now has to pick out where they're putting the commercial breaks? And potentially you go through in Watkins Glen where it's 90 laps of green flag racing. You know, it's nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about the tough decision that you have to make on the event organizing side. Right? You have to think about all those aspects. And that's the part that's tough is with the stage breaks, these TV partners have a built-in time into their broadcast where they could show their longer commercials. Whereas you run a 2 minute commercial during Bristol, you just miss 50 laps.
Right.
Whereas you run a 2 minute commercial at Bristol during the stage break, you missed a lap of caution. You know, so it's tough. You have to unfortunately, got to think about it from all sides. But I get what you're saying.
I think the one thing, too, is a lot of people don't like is that what Fox usually does when they come back from commercial, the pace car is coming up pit road. They did it at COTA. Like, as they're coming back, they're taking the turn into 20 and coming to the start-finish line.
To go green?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
It's like, oh my God.
It's timing.
It's not like it's like halfway down the track. It's like, oh, I got time to, oh no, it's commercial. Oh God, the green flag. Oh my God, I can't miss it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's timing. Trust me, as a live sports producer, there's nothing better than watching your commercial break end, and when you come back, there's the first pitch of the game. Because it's like, I didn't miss it, but I also got the most out of my break opportunity. Now, granted, my producing is a little different than Fox.
I was going to say.
But still, I'm saying, though, in general, that's just live TV. Jordan's holding himself back here. He wants to, like, say stuff, but he's like, I'm on a platform. No, but I mean, it's, look, I'm trying to be the neutral guy here because I have an opinion on this as well as you do.
Yeah.
But we're both just trying to be neutral right down the minute. Middle. Right down the
right
minute.
Right
down the middle. But it's just, you have to think. It's like I said, it's a double-edged sword. You show more commercials. The TV partners are getting paid more. NASCAR is getting paid more. Yay. Your fans are now upset.
Right.
NASCAR's losing fans. Mm-hmm. Your viewership's now down. Mm-hmm. Sponsors don't want to come. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's almost like the snake bites its own tail.
Yeah, I think it's,
you know, like, less commercials. Fans are happy. TV production doesn't make as much money. NASCAR doesn't make as much money. Sponsors don't want to be there.
I think the most controversial debate out of all NASCAR fans is NBC versus Fox. Where it's like, oh, NBC does this, and they don't have as many commercial breaks. Or they have longer commercial breaks, but at the same time, you catch more action in between than what Fox does. And it's like, oh, they have this person. Oh, yeah, they got this. So I think that's more of like, oh, yeah.
Well, and wait till next year when six races are on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that's going to...
And I think that...
People are already mad about that.
I think that is going to be... I think that's NASCAR beta testing the idea of putting it on streaming behind a paywall.
Right, it's kind of like the Xfinity Series going to CW
right
next year.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but CW is like Fox. Most people have it, right? Or is that like NBC Sports?
I think it's like NBC Sports.
Oh,
I don't think it's like Fox.
I've always had CW on my TV partners that or packages. That's why I'm like, it's just a common channel, right? But either way, I think that's your answer, right, for NASCAR and the TV production companies. You want to show more of the game. You want to show more of the race. You want to show more of whatever you're showing. How do you make money back? You charge people to watch, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now,
so
let's go back to what I just said about alien. Let's go back to what I just said about the fans. So now NASCAR is showing less commercials, showing more on TV, showing more of the action because they charge $10 to watch a month. But now my grandfather or my uncle or my dad or anybody is sitting there going, I have to pay $10 a month. I'm not paying for that.
So,
you know, so it's double-edged sword.
We were both talking about the CW. Part ownership is Warner Brothers Discovery, which is TNT.
Got it.
Which obviously is going into the sport. Well, again, next year.
That's also Max, HBO Max, right?
Mm-hmm. Paramount mm-hmm. Global also is part ownership, but it's mainly owned by Nexstar Media Group.
Interesting. So, I mean, I guess going back to the stage breaks topic, it kind of unfortunately comes back down to the commercial break topic and everything because it's just kind of one of those things where, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. You want stage breaks to make the action better. This way you don't have an 85-lap green flag run. But you don't want stage breaks because you don't want artificial racing.
Right.
But when the track is 3 miles long, 30-something cars get strung out, everyone's got plenty of room to run their own race.
Right.
You're not going to have accidental contact and cautions. You know, it's not like Martinsville where you're guaranteed at least one caution or two in between each stage break because somebody gets into somebody or a park fails or something like that. Like, I don't know. It's difficult. I personally like last year when you had the stage break, but they kept racing.
I like that too.
You know, and I honestly think you could do that at every racetrack. That's what I said from the get-go.
Yeah.
And also, or the other thing I never liked about the stage break straight up, not to kind of go off top on a little tangent here, your stage runs are 60, 60, and 100. At lap 60 will be the end of stage one. We'll go racing at lap 67. So stage two isn't 60 laps.
It's 53. Yeah.
You know, or at the end of lap 120, that's the end of stage two. We'll go racing at lap 130. So it's not a 100-lap run to the end. It's 90.
Right.
Like, it's like, hold on a minute. That's like, I don't want to say false advertising, but it's like, you're telling us that it's going to be a 60-lap run, but really, after the caution period in between stage breaks, it's more like a 53-lap run. And if anybody in motorsports knows how gas mileage works, 7 laps at like a Daytona, huh, that could make or break your stage run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always felt like what they do during the all-star, like the all-star breaks or all-star races. Caution comes out, you don't count the caution laps. If you're going to make stage breaks 60, 60, and 100 or whatever, make them 60, 60, and 100 or 75, 75, and 150
right.
or whatever. But there's probably some reason for it. So we just went with it.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. Real quick, let's talk about, I know we kind of dabbled on this throughout the whole show so far about track limits. My final opinion on this is if you're going to do it in one section, either have it in other sections or have it not at all.
So, listening to, again, Action's Detrimental, Denny Hamlin said the S's are the only way thing that makes sense because it's for NASCAR. It's going to be hard to keep track of track limits everywhere around the track.
Yes, I get it, but at the same time, if you do it IndyCar, no, not even IndyCar, Formula One does, and it just says, here's the white line, you go over it, you're over it. I mean, how many cameras do you have around the racetrack? How many cameras does NASCAR alone have around the racetrack to before the TV ones come in?
Unknown.
I'm just saying, though. Race control on a road course looks like March Madness in the first round.
Yes.
You know, like, they got cameras everywhere.
It's just like what NBC does on the road course where they do the radio style where it's like, oh, heavy turn, it's like someone else talking. It's, oh.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. I get where they're coming from because if you don't have track limits in the S's, what's stopping somebody from literally just going straight through it?
Right.
But at the same time, there's plenty that's stopping them from doing it because the curbs are not flat. So it's like, I don't know. The track's not designed to go straight through either.
No.
So at the end of the day, I don't want to say like natural selection because that sounds harsh. But like, if Denny Hamlin or William Byron or Chase Elliott wants to floor it and try and go left and right and wind up bang, 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 bang off the bumpers and then into the tire barrier,
Let him.
You know, like, I get it. You can make up a couple tenths by switching in between on the inside of the curbing instead of on the outside of the curbing. I get it. But I think if you're going to want to do that, then put the turtles up. But then it becomes a safety hazard because a car hits a turtle. He goes airborne. He hits another driver. Like, it's like there are so many different things that's just like, again, the double-edged sword idea where it's like, well, if you do this, then that happens. You do that, then this happens. And I think Circuit of the Americas is the only one that's kind of difficult in the sense to be able to police this because for the most part, every other road course we run on, or street course even now, it's all self-policing. Chicago, you go out of the line, doesn't matter where you go, you're into the wall.
Yeah, no, like, Gregson found that out in turn six. He made friends with the wall that entire barrier, the whole race.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, you, Watkins Glen, you go off the pavement, it's not a track limits issue, you're in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sonoma, it's you're in the dirt. You know, there is, like, I don't know. It's difficult. Like I said, my opinion is you go, you have it run, track limits all around or none at all. And I know none at all is not an option.
Right.
So, difficult. Hold on. Bob Pockers coming in with a tweet basically saying that Chastain's car was good at R&D. No penalties to the 04 truck for the rear axle. Only penalties from Coda were a couple fines for a couple loose and missing lug nuts.
It's good that Marco Andretti's team didn't get penalized for that axle because it's not like it's... Obviously, you know the penalties when tires come off, but it's like the whole axle, it's like it's kind of not on the team's fault for that.
What's the penalty for the whole truck falling apart? Hang on. But yeah, so any thoughts on track limits?
I kind of agree with everything you said.
It's just, I'm glad that we're not in position to have to make those decisions.
Right. Like, definitely me too.
It's one of those things where it's like, how do we go about this? I don't know. We'll just wait for them to release the press note, press release. Anyways, so coming up this weekend, NASCAR headed to Richmond. Special 7 p.m. start on Sunday night. Because it's an Easter holiday. Xfinity Series also there. Modified's there as well on Friday. You can watch that on Flow Racing. And... should be a good weekend. Richmond's always fun. Find out that they're using the same short track tire as Bristol at this?
Nope.
That's depressing.
Yeah, Denny Hamlin was too. He was like, can you imagine? He's like, Bristol's a fun track because of the strategy. He's like, can you imagine you put the Bristol tire? Whoo!
I think it would have been fine. I agree.
Unfortunately.
Like Dale Jr. said it last week on DBC. He thinks it would be different because it's asphalt.
Unfortunately, Richmond, I think, has the same short track package as Phoenix did.
Well, this week we'll find out if it's the short track package or if it's Phoenix.
it could be Phoenix. I'm ready to prepare that it's Phoenix.
We might find some conclusive results today, folks, or this weekend, folks. I'm excited. It should be a good weekend. Always fun watching Richmond, especially night racing there. There's just something about, I know you're probably the same way. You grew up and every race at Richmond was under the lights.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, that's what you grew up knowing, you know. Oh, Richmond, we're racing at night. I remember the first time they ran on a Sunday afternoon. I was like, this is weird. this is, Richmond should, the only time Richmond should be racing without lights on is if we're running on Monday. Like, we need to be under the lights. So, definitely exciting weekend for sure. Any other final thoughts from you, Jordan?
I don't have any, no.
Me neither. I can't think of any other things I wanted to talk about. I think, overall, another successful weekend at COTA. I'm really glad that NASCAR and SMI stayed with it after the monsoon the first year with the really bad rain.
Yep.
Because I think now it's starting to prove itself like it's supposed to. And I'm glad, you know, hopefully they go back next year to Circuit of the Americas. Should be an exciting weekend at Richmond. Again, Formula One off this week. They'll be back next week in Japan. IndyCar off for almost a month. They'll be back at Long Beach. That's also when IMSA Sports Car Championship runs. And, So if you have no final thoughts, I guess that's the end of our podcast. Jordan, I want to say thank you for coming back in person this week. We'll be back on the digital side next week.
Yep, only for...
Well, actually, we might not have a show next week because I'll be potentially... I'm getting a dental surgery tomorrow.
Yes.
So there's potential I won't be able to talk much in a week. But we'll definitely keep you posted on social media. Speaking of social media, make sure to go like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts as well as Spotify and YouTube, where all of our shows are. But yeah, Jordan, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate you every week. Always a great conversation. apologies if my mind's a little scattered. I got some things on my mind as far as tomorrow with my dental stuff. But
Devin's going to be a little loopy.
Yeah, I'm losing my wisdom tomorrow. That's all I'm going to say. But Jordan Jenkins, my name's Devin Poslesny. We hope you have a great night, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in to Racing Hotspot.